The subject of this week's programme once described himself as an obsessive, depressive, diabetic, epileptic, who's apprehensive, selfish, intolerant and ruthless. A Welsh artist, famous for his paintings inspired by the North Wales landscape, spent much of his life railing against the art world, describing modern art as totally, totally unlikable and teaching in art colleges as disgraceful. He never really chose to be an artist, but calls painting for him a terminal disease. He is, or was, Cuffin Williams, born in Anglesey, North Wales, in 1918, dying there at the age of 88 in 2006. And my guest choosing Cuffin Williams this week is Rolf Harris. Rolf, why Cuffin?
Well, my wife and I have always loved his work, and any time we went to a Royal Academy exhibition, we would just make a beeline for the room where the Royal Academicians exhibited, and there was Cuffin's work with the mountains plastered on with a wonderful palette knife, gutsy colours and all the different greys of the stonework just so close together and yet totally different, and conveying the mountains in such a lovely way. And then I was doing a programme with the BBC called Rolf on Art, and we were talking about lithographs, and I met a chap called Michael Adams, who's a partner in the Kirwan Galleries where we did it up in Cambridgeshire, and he showed us some of Cuffin Williams, and my eyes lit up and my hair stood on end, and I said, oh gosh, how many of those have you done? And he said, oh, I don't know, about 100 I suppose. And I said, oh, my wife and I, we've always loved his work. And he said, well, he lives just around the corner from me in Anglesey. If you'd like to meet him, he said, and those words stood out like beacons in midair. If you'd like to meet him, come and stay with us and I'll drive you around to his place.
Which I would like to ask you about in just a moment. But first, a little bit more about Rolf Harris. He's an artist, musician, singer, TV presenter, born in Perth, Western Australia, and dangerously close to being a national treasure in two continents. Awarded the CBE here and the Order of Australia there. Talk about polyglot. What can you leave out in this CV? He's been a champion swimmer, had chart-topping hits, written best-selling books, been voted best entertainer ever at Glastonbury. His paintings have been exhibited in London's National Gallery, and he's an honorary member of the Royal Society of British Artists. His portrait of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II to celebrate her 80th birthday was the subject of a whole programme, The Queen, in 2006. And in Australia, he's designed their commemorative silver kangaroo dollar coin. I could go on, but I won't. The crux is that Rolf Harris is one of the greatest popularisers of serious art who has ever lived. And then you met the man, Rolf. What was he like?
Well, he was so unlike what we expected. I had never seen a picture of him, and from his art, from his gutsy palette knife paintings of mountains, I had imagined some great bear of a man with massive shoulders and a huge beard, you know, and glowering under lowered eyebrows and
yes,
and shouting out in a loud voice about this, that and the other, and I thought he'd be larger than life. And he was a gentle, quiet, very slim man, and very self-effacing and absolutely charming and totally unlike what I'd expected.
You've actually brought into the studio for us to look at and contemplate while we talk a portrait of Sir Cuffin Williams. I'm going to hand it to you, Rolf, and ask you to do what you do so well, which is to enthuse and put into words something that our listeners can't obviously themselves see. Describe this portrait of Sir Cuffin in his old age.
Well, it was when I went round to see him in his home, he was sitting in this big lounge chair, red lounge chair, and he was lit from above by the electric light, which, as you possibly know, perhaps you don't know, but the electric light is very yellowish in comparison to daylight. But he had the big door open at the end of the room, and all the daylight was flooding in there, so you get the bluish daylight on reflected from his knees and from the front of his hands and from the shadow areas of his face, while the brilliant yellow light from above is picking out the highlights on his face. And what I did was I took that... I brought that painting of Cuffin's in to show you. He gave that to my wife. It's just an
ordinary, a really beautiful little painting.
It's a pen and ink and wash painting. And
simple, buildings in the foreground and a Welsh hill in the background. I find it hard to put into words what's so affecting about it, but it's lovely.
It's so Welsh. It's like a Welsh little farmstead and outlying buildings. So I've transposed that into my painting as a background. As you can see there, that's the background is exactly that, but done in colour instead of in black and white.
I see, yes.
And I've got that hill behind him and a sort of a stormy sky, and then effortlessly it moves into a sort of lounge room picture of Cuffin with his hands on the arms of the chair and looking straight at the viewer. That's me with the camera, and I took the shots and took them back home and tried to get that gentle, quizzical sort of look.
Exactly. You use that word, gentle, and that face is so gentle. Did he strike you as the way he described himself, selfish, intolerant and ruthless?
Well, we never saw that side of him, except when he went on about the lack of teaching of drawing in art schools, which he thought was a crime against humanity, really. He said that art schools nowadays, they just say, do what you want to do, do your own concept and get on with it. And they never taught the serious art of how to draw what you see, to give yourself that, you know, that basic background against which you can create whatever you want to do. But if you can't draw, you're so hampered, I think, in painting. And Sir Cuffin thought that.
Let's bring in our expert now, Derek Llwyd Morgan. Professor Morgan is a poet, literary historian and critic. He's been Professor of the Welsh Language and Vice-Chancellor of the University of Wales at Aberystwyth since 1995, as well as Chairman and President of the National Eisteddfod. And as it happens, he's Chairman of the Sir Cuffin Williams Trust. Did you know him, Professor Morgan?
Yes, I knew him very well. I went to live in the late 70s in Tullanfair Pwllgwyngyll, the village with a long name in Anglesey, and Cuffin lived just outside. And because he was interested in Welsh scholarship and I was interested in art, we got to know each other and got on like a house on fire. But I didn't get to his studio until my daughter was 18. This was December 1984. His Christmas card was the first to arrive every Christmas. And when Ellen neared her 18th birthday, I asked her, what would you like? And she picked up Cuffin's card and said, I'd like a sketch like this. So I rang up the two galleries in North Wales I knew stocked Cuffin, or Cuffiniana, and neither had anything. So I rang the great man and said, an 18-year-old blonde wants to buy a work of yours. Come down! And he's a raconteur. So I went down, and he took me to the back of the house. He had a little studio up the steps, and grabbed about 40 or 50 sketches like the one Rolf has shown us now. And he went through them and said, hopeless, 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 that's okay, hopeless, hopeless, that's okay. And in the end, I had about 8 or 9, which he said were okay. Choose one, I'll sell it to you cheaply, on one condition, that I can take it to the framers, because he was very fussy about that. So that was the first great bond we had. But I knew him until his death, and had the great pleasure of giving the address at his funeral as well. So yes, I knew him well and loved the man.
How have art critics tended to categorise his work? If we wanted a simple phrase, in a nutshell, what sort of an artist is he?
There are two schools of Cuffin critics. One which says that he has created Welsh landscape as nobody's created it since the 18th century, since Wilson, for instance, or Thomas Jones of Pencerrig. Others say he's much too sentimental, and when you see his shepherds with binding cord around their waists and sheepdogs on top of Snowdonia, they say, oh, that craggy shepherd, he's too sentimental for words. But the people love him, and people buy his stuff and see the Welsh landscape through Cuffin's eyes.
They see themselves.
Yeah, and once you see the mountains, rock and farmhouses and the sea through Cuffin, you see them in nature like that as well. He's got that impact, the landscaper taking over the land.
If an artist, either a fine artist or a musician, if their work is immediately accessible and wins wide popular approval fast and stays popular, you always get, I don't know about Australia, but you do in Britain, always get that barely concealed sneer from the establishment. You must have heard it yourself, Rolf.
Who does he think he is, Rembrandt? You know, and you think, oh, gosh, you didn't have to say that. Yeah, I had one art critic say, Rolf Harris always looks naff wherever he goes, whatever he does. He's always got the wrong clothes on. And you think, what has that got to do with my ability at art? You know, you think, he's just showing off how clever he is at writing.
But what about the art itself being taken less seriously because it's popular? We're really bad at that in Britain, don't you think?
I guess we are a bit, yeah.
But he didn't mind so much.
He didn't?
Well, he was, in one way, very self-confident.
Mm.
On the other hand, he was self-deprecating. He's got a wonderful autobiography, Across the Straits, which takes, as it seems, the creation of the artist, the man becoming artist. But self-deprecation is a theme throughout that one. He talks of himself as a small boy at 6 years of age, going back to the parish where his great-grandfather and his grandfather had been rectors. And he sits there at table in a farmhouse. And the lady of the farmhouse sits and says, "Only 6 pancakes, John." She called him John. Do, you're hopeless, probably saying in Welsh, "Ti'n anobeithiol." And from that story about being hopeless, not being able to eat more than 6 pancakes, he goes through his life. And as you said in your introduction, he became, according to him, an artist by accident because he had fits and so on, that he wasn't good enough for the OTC and for the army. And a doctor told him, "You'd better take up art, Williams." But there was art in the blood, art in the genes. There was a great-grandmother who was a very good artist in the 18th century and early 19th century.
I think the doctor actually said to him, after his attack of polio, leaving him with the epilepsy, he said to him, "You're never going to be able to lead a normal life, so you must become an artist."
Yes, something like that, yes.
And he went to the Slade School of Art, didn't he?
Yeah, Rolf? And when he started, they thought he was useless because he'd never done any before, you know, but he managed to stay there for 3 years and won a scholarship along the way and finished up with a leaving scholarship at the end of it. And he was just amazing. He got the Winston Churchill Fellowship and that took him to Patagonia,
that's right,
where he studied all the Welsh emigres who'd formed a sort of a little Welsh
colony
enclave out there. And
Trelew, isn't it?
That's right,
yes.
Trelew.
Yeah, and he did all the paintings and drawings of them, which are absolutely exquisite.
Yes, and they're different from the Welsh portraits and the Welsh landscapes,
yes,
because
yes,
Patagonia is different, isn't it? It's more or less semi-desert country. And the people there, they are two generations behind with their Welsh and with their Welsh culture because they're stuck in a time warp. And he caught that very well.
Yeah, and their language is totally different to present-day Welsh
language. It's different. It's two or three generations different.
Mm.
Did he, Rolf, meet with immediate acclaim, or did he struggle? Did he intend to be an artist when he started?
Do you know, I don't know enough about his background. I mean, we came to meet the man very late in his life, almost like a year and a half before he died. You would be able to answer that more than
I. Well, from my point of view, you know, somebody was brought up in the working class in South Welsh Anthracite Coalfields. I would think of Cuffin as something of a toff. His parents from both sides were the son and the daughter of clergymen in Anglesey. He was from the Anglican sub-aristocracy, as it were, although he wasn't very rich. He went to the Slade, as you said, and then he took up teaching in Highgate. But in the early 70s, he decided, I've got enough now to show and to sell. He had been showing and selling stuff throughout the 50s and 60s. And one of his early mentors was Nicholas Edwards's father, Lord Crickhowell's father. And through him he got to be shown, or his work shown, in London galleries. And then he took the plunge to go back to Anglesey. His mother had taken a cottage in Llansadwn, which he went to live in. And then a year after, he was given a house on the estate by the Marquis of Anglesey.
Mm.
And he stayed there from 1974 until he died, painting every day, and probably making thousands of sketches, artworks, oils, watercolours.
And he used to love to go out and paint the whole thing in one sitting out in the open air on these huge canvases with his palette knife. He used to like to get them finished in one go.
It's said that when he was teaching at Highgate School, quite often if he wanted to go out and do a bit of sketching, he would just go and cut the lessons that he was supposed to be teaching. I mean, the headmaster was remarkably tolerant with him. Did you, when you met him, as you say, late in his life, did you get this feeling of a sort of fine disregard for...
Yes, you got that feeling all the time. It was just a twinkle in the eye, lovely stories, and... He told us a story. You mentioned Llanfair Pwllgwyngyll. How do you say that?
I can't. Yes.
Yeah, that long name, yes. 58 letters in it. And he told the story about two chaps from England who came along and they were looking at this great long name on the railway station, and they went across the road to this little cafe and they went in there and said, look, excuse me, we're both from England and wondered if you could tell us, how do you pronounce the name of this place? And she said... You're kidding. He said, no, we're not from here. You know, we come from England and we just wanted to know how you actually say the name of this place. She said, you're serious. He said, yes. He started to get a bit embarrassed. So she looked at him with her eyebrows raised and she said, Burger King.
He was a raconteur.
Ah, yeah, what a lovely man.
His Welshness is obviously important to you, Rolf. Are your associations with Wales blood or just haphazard?
Well, my mum and dad were both from Cardiff area. My dad
I had no
was,
idea.
Yeah, Dad was born in Bristol, but his father was from Merthyr Tydfil.
Mm.
And he was a portrait painter, which is where I get that in my genes, I suppose, from him. But he said to all his sons, he had nine children, five sons, four daughters, said to all the boys, whatever you do, don't do what I do. Get a real job. If you're an artist, you will be forever begging people to buy your work. You'll always be broke. You'll always be trying to scrape up enough money to buy food for the table. Get a real job. Don't do what I... And he actually... physically talked them out of it, whereas the girls in Victorian England and Wales, it was a genteel thing for girls to do, to learn watercolours and things. So he encouraged them. But my dad had all the talent, but had it ruthlessly sort of crushed in his childhood. My dad encouraged me, bent over backwards, like the swing of the pendulum the other way. When he saw that I had talent, he would get me the best materials he could afford, good watercolour paper, good brush. I only had one brush when I started out, one good brush, but a really good one, and good watercolours, and he helped me with really good criticism. My mum was very enthusiastic, but she didn't have much artistic flair. She was very good at languages and very good at mathematics. And
Did Cuffin's epilepsy, which we haven't talked about much, but which must have stalked him all his life, did it affect his painting? Did it affect his mood?
I don't know if it affected his mood any more than anything else would affect any artist's mood, but he was very self-conscious of it. And he always says, I didn't marry because I was an epileptic. Now, I don't know if that is true or not, but he always had plenty of friends of both sexes. And I know women under 70 and over 70 who loved him with all their heart and wished that they could have been Lady Williams or Mrs. Cuffin.
I think possibly it was the parents of whatever girl he was romancing at the time who would say, oh, you mustn't marry him because he's got epilepsy here. You
know? Maybe.
I don't know. Who knows?
What was it, Rolf, about modern art that he objected to so much? He's sort of almost uncharacteristically vituperative when he begins to talk about
modern art. He just didn't see the relevancy of somebody putting a video of a bedroom shown through whatever happened during the day in this bedroom and putting that up as a work of art.
Sounds like you agree with him.
Yes, I do, yeah. I can't see any joy in that. And the shattering thing is that quite often these people who have made huge reputations and sold works of art for huge amounts of money, and works of art which Cuffin wouldn't have given house room to in any way, shape or form, because he didn't rate them, because there was no drawing in them, there was no sign of any ability to draw. But some of those people are excellent artists and can draw beautifully and can sculpt beautifully, but they decide to try and do something else, which is a shocking thing, cutting up things in formaldehyde and putting him in a glass case and saying that's worth X millions. Cuffin hated that. Hated it with the deep-seated loathing.
He was very critical of people who couldn't draw. On the other hand, there are a host of people of younger generations, and Cuffin was a great patron of them. Mm. Some of them are not naturalistic artists, and he was very expressionistic in some of his landscapes, but there are people like William Selwyn, Ellery Mills, wonderful. Darren Hughes. Cuffin would say to them, carry on, and they have carried on. And he has created in Wales something that we've never had. That is a congregation of people, a crowd of people appreciating art. You know, the land of my fathers is Gwlad Beirdd the Chantorion. It's a country of poets and songsters. But Cuffin has made us into Gwlad Arlinwyr, a country of artists. And I dare say now that more people would recognise a painting by Cuffin than would recognise a poem by any Welsh poet, be he a Welsh-speaking poet or Welsh-writing poet or an English poet or Welsh poet writing in English, if he was a Bobby Jones or a Danny Apsey. A Cuffin would be known straight away.
You've done the same thing, Rolf Harris, throughout your career, both in Australia and over here. You have turned people into art appreciators. My taxi was brought me here. I was late, and I said to the taxi driver, "Be as quick as you can. I've got Rolf Harris waiting for me, I'm late." And the taxi driver said, "Oh, it'll be fine. He's a very, very nice man." He said, "I grew up with him." Well, there are people all over the world.
That's
who think they've
lovely.
Grown up with
yeah.
You.
Well, they did grow up with me because I've been on television now since the '50s.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of people in this day and age who are in their 70s, they remember me from, you know, from all those years ago, 50 years ago.
Did you feel with Williams that he was painting for himself or for the world or for Wales? Is it a sensible question to ask Derek who a painter is painting for?
Yes, I think he was painting for Wales. He didn't have a cap for rugby or for soccer, didn't play cricket for Glamorgan, but he always called himself a Welsh artist. And we come back to something we mentioned before. He has created an interpretation of the landscape that we know, and he has given the Welsh an imaginative knowledge of their land, which is something fabulous. But he'd probably think we were getting serious now. Like Rolf Harris, well, Rolf Harris is a lyricist and a poet. Cuffin would now and again write limericks and some poems.
Oh, yes. Yeah, but he did that. He did all those limericks about Cosher Bailey.
Yeah.
Drove a train and it was...
I met a man, I can't think where, who said that he was Tony Blair. But what was really very odd, he also said that he was God.
Now that he's gone, Rolf, how do you think he'll be remembered? Do you think he will be remembered outside Wales?
Gosh, you know, I don't know enough about his acceptance in other parts of the world, but...
In Wales, there is now a dedicated gallery to his work. In the 1990s, he gave about 450 works to the Anglesey County Council. And one of the last wishes that Cuffin had on this earth was that there would be built in Anglesey, just outside Llangefni, where he was born, a gallery dedicated to his works. And it was opened exactly a year ago. And since July 2008, we have had over 150,000 visitors to that place.
I know that in Wales, they love the man.
How about you, Rolf? What is it really about him that makes his life a great life for you? Is it the art? Is it the man? Is it the Welshness?
It's a combination of all those two. I loved the self-effacing attitude that he had. It's like I'm nothing special, you know. I'm just a painter, and I love to do it. But don't put me up on a pedestal. I'm just Cuffin Williams. You know, it was one of my abiding memories of the lovely man. Was he asked me to open an exhibition in Conway at the gallery there? I think he was president of the Cambrian Art Society, and I did that, and showing off as ever, I launched into the song that Rodri Williams taught me when I was doing Animal Hospital. I don't speak the Welsh. I sing it only because I've learned it parrot fashion. But I started singing Nidwin Govin Bowed Moithis, Irebeard Neighbour Lie Mine. And Cuffin came over and stood next to me. And we sang it together. And it was just wonderful. And that will live with me till I'm gone, you know, that memory.
You're quite overcome.
Yeah.
And yet you didn't know him very well. You know his work, but you didn't know the man very well. I just wondered whether the feeling, the yearning that you have towards him and his work is partly also towards Wales, yeah, and towards your own ancestral roots, from which you have, in a sense, been not completely, but substantially separated.
Yeah, my granddad was a portrait painter from Merthyr Tydfil up there in the middle of Wales, and
you're cosmopolitan.
I cross over that bridge, you know, and straight away it's very emotional to be in Wales. I have but to hear a Welsh choir, and I'm in tears. Yeah.
Would he have been proud, Derek, of the way that he's remembered and of what he's done? Well, he was knighted in 1999. He became a great British figure as well as a son of Wales. Did those things mean very much to him?
Yes, they did. I don't think that the knighthood meant as much to him as the fact that young Welsh people buy him, although he took the knighthood and delighted in it. And I remember him telling me a few weeks before he died that there was a knock on the door in Pwllfanogl by the Menai Straits, where he lived one day. And he opened the door, and there was a young mother and a young father there with a babe in arms. He didn't know them from Adam and Eve, but he asked them in. And he asked them after a few minutes, "What can I do for you?" And they said, "We've come to ask your permission to name this little boy Cuffin." Ah. Now that gave him delight.
We'll always have a lovely warm spot in everybody's hearts, I'm sure.
You've been listening to Great Lives, where my guest this week, Rolf Harris, has chosen the Welsh painter Sir Cuffin Williams as his great life. Our expert has been Derek Llwyd Morgan. Goodbye.